How easy is it to use today's sponsor, Gusto? I'll show you. I'm going to sign into my account, and then under the People section, I will select my producer, Emily, and from there, I can go to the Pay tab, and in the Compensation section, I can select Edit and enter her new hourly rate of $1,000. Wait. We can't afford that, Emily. Well, despite her schemes to get a raise, my producer, Emily, really is paid using Gusto. Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all-in-one, remote-friendly, and incredibly easy to use, so you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k, you name it. Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. Unlimited payroll runs for one monthly price, no hidden fees, no surprises. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/HSH and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/HSH. One more time, gusto.com/HSH.
I was the first person in my family to get into college. My family was very poor on both sides of my family. We left my dad when I was 9 years old. I was raised by a single mom. I started working when I was 15. I worked in malls, I cleaned gym equipment, and I happened to be a hostess at Hooters while I was still in high school. All people say, oh, you're comfortable with risk. Given where I came from, making those decisions to do something unexpected or previously unknown, it felt like more of a risk to say no. If I wait until it's perfect, I am gonna be stuck.
Hey everyone, welcome to How Success Happens. I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at Entrepreneur.com. And this show is not only good for you, but it tastes great too. Not unlike the product made by today's guest. Kat Cole is the CEO of AG1, the green daily supplement drink that, given that it did about $600 million in sales last year, there's probably a pretty good chance that you listening had a drink of it this morning. So let's welcome in Kat. How are you?
Excellent. Lots of energy from my AG1. Hopefully like your listeners.
Yes. So there is so much I want to ask you about, doing some research. There are more than one point during your career that made me go, wait, what? So let's start with this. I want to know, how did you go from a company that makes this to a company that makes this?
One.
Delicious.
Delicious. Both delicious, both very different in, outcomes on your health.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. What's super fun and I think captures highlights of my professional journey are things that don't seem to make sense together. Even if you take it further back, right? Hooters, I was with Hooters for 14 years and was a Hooters girl. And then as I moved up and moved into the executive ranks of that company and expanded the business around the world, ended up transitioning to private equity held food and beverage companies. And Cinnabon was the first of those where I was a first time president of a global brand, with all kinds of really interesting, beautiful parts, you know, the brand, the aroma, the flavor, the nostalgia, and all kinds of really not beautiful parts. The business was in a period of economic challenge because it was the Great Recession. We were in malls and airports. People were starting to indulge differently and more consciously. And Cinnabon is one of those brands and products that is the poster child for indulgence. And there were some really interesting opportunities to lean into that while being a good corporate citizen in the food and beverage space. But there were many other brands between Cinnabon and AG1. I was able to actually focus more on healthfulness. We had a range, right? We had Fun For You brands that were truly brands that were indulgent. And in fact, our messaging was, don't eat this every day. It's not for kids. It's not being marketed to young people. It's not being marketed as something healthy. It's not breakfast. It's a treat. And I was able to exercise that desire to bring nutrition to the forefront in those other brands. But those are less fun to compare than Cinnabon to, so there are other more explanatory dots between Cinnabon.
Got it.
But what's really interesting is, even though those other brands gave me an opportunity to flex my desire for more healthfulness in the world, the reality is, while I was running those brands, I went on my own personal health journey. I had kids later in life. I had my kids at 39 and 41. I had several miscarriages before and in between. My mom had breast cancer at that point. I mean, multiple, very normal these days, but multiple wrecking ball moments.
It drove
me as an individual to get more serious about health, not just nutrition, health. But then as I explored that, I learned more about nutrition. I couldn't unlearn what I had learned or unhear what I had heard. So I had three paths to get express that. One was make the brands where it made sense as healthful as possible in our portfolio. Two, invest my personal capital and time in early stage better for you businesses, which is how I started to get involved in startups and early stage brands separate of my big scaled business. And then three, eventually move my alignment of my career to not just a better for you food and beverage business, but an actual health company in the business of nutrition. Eventually that led me to AG1.
That's incredible. And sorry that you went through all of that. And, you know, as you said, like, people listening are going through that as we listen. It's interesting to me how, I mean, clearly you have a passion for business and brand building, and how this thing inside you sort of bubbled to the surface and you were able to align these two things. And the way you describe it, it sounds like it was pretty strategic. Like, were you searching for the AG1 opportunity, or did it come to you?
That's a great question. It sounds more strategic than it was, but maybe it was subconsciously strategic, if that's a thing.
Okay, sure. So, trademark that.
Yeah. So let's connect the dots the lines and the paths that eventually converged. One, over my time at Focus Brands, I could have made the decision to run larger and larger food, beverage, and franchise companies. That would have been a very linear and obvious path. Plenty of opportunities to do that. Run more brands, run more franchises, bigger, bigger, bigger companies. But there was a moment where launching branded products in grocery was this fledgling innovative business in our company. And I raised my hand to run that emerging division, immediately reducing my number of direct reports, immediately reducing the revenue I was responsible for, because it was new. But that decision pulled me away from and broadened me from my decades of restaurants and franchising into packaged goods. So that's point number one. I was moving into things sold in retail versus hospitality and food service. Then two, I was angel investing in early stage businesses, which put me in on my own years before the AG1 opportunity, which was a genuine desire to put my money where my beliefs were.
Yeah.
In addition to my business. And what that did was put me in an ecosystem, in a network of early stage founders, which then put me on podcasts for early stage businesses that I likely would have otherwise not been involved in, which is where the AG1 founder first heard me. And then, yes, at the end of my run at Focus Brands, I realized that because our portfolio was getting larger and larger, in order to continue to grow, we grew through M&A in addition to organic scaling. We would continue to buy larger and larger companies, which by definition are probably not the most modern in the industry. So if you're going to buy scale, you're also going to buy history and maybe more rooted in the past, food and menu items, less healthful, et cetera. So at the end, I was COO of the parent company, multiple billions in sales, managing 9 presidents. That is where the strategic part came in. I knew that when I made a change, I knew I would eventually. I was there for 10 years. I didn't have a desire to be the CEO and sign up for another 5-10 years of that business for these exact reasons. So I knew whatever I stepped into would be more in line with where I am around nutrition and health. It would be a health or healthful company. and where I believe the consumer was going. So it wasn't just altruistic, like I now believe in nutrition and so I'm gonna
right.
change the world. It was also this idea of, you know, I think the customer's going there too. Therefore, business opportunity, future scale, being an earlier wave of an industry's maturity curve. So then when the founder of AG1 asked to be introduced to me, because he had been on heard me on a podcast, I was already a customer. I'd been a customer for 2 years. I had deep empathy and understanding for early stage businesses because of my years of investing and advising. And I had already expressed the, at least internal desire to make a move to a more healthful company.
Yeah.
So it really came to me, but there were things I put in place genuinely that look strategic looking back, but were just me following what I believed.
Wow. Well, who knows what opportunities will be unlocked from this podcast interview? Like, who knows?
Who knows?
Sky's the limit.
That's right. That's
amazing. And so when you came into AG1, I want to ask you about this. It was called Athletic Greens. So I wanted to ask you about, you know, your decision to change the name.
There were a few things that were clear to us. We changed the name in 2021. From Athletic Greens to AG1, and we didn't do it alone. We had an incredible branding firm who helped us think through our options, but we gave them a brief. And the brief was, one, our name was Athletic Greens. It served us very well. We were the kind of the market maker, the creator of the space, popularized the category in a meaningful way. So it served a purpose. But it also, we believed at that point, was beginning to create limitations.
Do you ever look at your bank statement and think, what the heck happened here? Like, did I accidentally buy a timeshare or fund a minor league baseball team? Yeah, me too. Until I got Monarch. Now I can see that last month I dropped $110.73 on entertainment, which sounds fancy, but really it was like 2 books and 1 trip to the movies, where I paid $27 for a medium popcorn and 2 drinks. Pretty sure the theater just fills the bucket with actual gold kernels at that price. Not terrible, I guess, but it definitely has me rethinking my life choices. Next time I'm smuggling in my own snacks like a common criminal. That $27 could be a hardcover, dagnabbit. Anyway, Monarch makes it so easy to track your spending, which is good, because I'm not filling out a spreadsheet every time I click on my Kindle at 1 a.m., and now that I get weekly recaps from Monarch, I can be more intentional about where my money goes. Are you ready to stop wasting money too? Set yourself up for financial success in 2026 with Monarch, the all-in-one tool that makes proactive money management simple all year long. Use code HAPPENS at monarch.com for half off your first year. That's 50% off your first year at monarch.com with code HAPPENS.
As a chef, I know flavor doesn't begin in the kitchen. It begins on the land. And Westholme's nature-led Australian Wagyu is a story written in the landscape of Northern Australia. Cooking is storytelling, and Westholme Wagyu carries a story of Northern Australia itself, raw, powerful, and deeply authentic. It's a testament to the passion and care raised in the rhythm of Northern Australia. I'm Chef Maylin from 88 Club in Los Angeles, and I invite you to visit westholme.com/Maylin to learn more and taste a story only Westholme nature-led Australian Wagyu can tell. That's westholme.com/Maylin.
Limitations like, are we only for athletes? As we get bigger,
yeah.
The answer was no, that's not who our customers exclusively were. Although that could be aspirational, right? You could still be called Athletic Greens, even if you're not an athlete. But more importantly, are we only greens? And we are not. This product is more a multivitamin, a future of what the multivitamin should be, a drinkable multivitamin plus greens or superfoods and phytonutrients, whole food-based phytonutrient blend that most of us don't get the diversity of in our diet that we need, plus pro and prebiotics. So we simplify multiple products many people are already stacking. We're not just a greens, and that was the problem. These were the headwinds, right? We knew we needed to change, but to your point, super scary. Our website was called athleticgreens.com. Our company was called Athletic Greens. Everyone called us Athletic Greens. And it's like, but the founder had said, you know, I wish I would have changed it 10 years ago. But every time the topic came up, oh, we're heading into another high season. Now's not the time. It's too, you know, we're too busy. We're growing too much. And what happened was that was never not the case from that point. So, you know, the best time to change it was yesterday. The next time is today, because if we keep growing and if we keep creating demand, it will only be a bigger challenge in the future. And I cannot even describe the amount of detail required, from legal to trademarks to like tagging and site experience. We didn't just change the name of our product. We changed the name of our store, which affects search and all kinds of things.
Wow.
So it was highly complex and nuanced as an endeavor, but we believed it was worth it. I mean, it was like 3, 2, 1 blast off. We're doing it. White knuckle. What's happening to search? What's happening to web traffic? Are people getting it? And we developed bridge strategies, backup strategies. We had backup plans. Like, what if it fails and no one can find us and our search volume go, you know, we had thresholds and we had good backup plans in place, but it was a bit of a mostly burn the boats decision.
Right.
We believed it was the right thing. We also believed Athletic Greens didn't have a lot of flexibility for future product innovation in naming, whereas AG1 does. We've since launched AGZ, our sleep product. So the naming architecture gave us more room for innovation that we did not have in the past, but we knew was coming very soon.
AG1 isn't cheap. You know why it costs more and you know why it's more valuable. But how do you get that across to consumers who are just looking at a price tag on their screen?
Yeah, one of the things is I think about educating consumers on price value and positioning. I've learned in all of my concepts in the past. First, you have to, if you're an entrepreneur, you have to be really clear who you serve. It can't be everyone, right? It's not everyone. So there are extremes of the consumer base that we are not trying to speak to, nor am I spending my energy to educate. There are people who are like, I don't believe in supplements. Okay, that's not a battle I'm going to fight. If our great education efforts over time and our work in the quality and human clinical trial research space help move people to a place of intrigue, interest, and belief, great. But that's not the population I'm trying to convince. On the other end, you have people who are so on the cutting edge of personalized nutrition that they are taking a bazillion tests and taking 100 separate pills and powders and have a team of physicians around them.
Yeah.
I'm also, for the most part, not addressing that group. It is the giant group in the middle who, first of all, believe that our food is not as nutrient dense as it once was. Even healthy eaters have nutrient gaps. Certainly people with pharmacological interventions, whether it's GLP-1s or others, that can negatively affect your gut health and your nutrient status because you're just eating less. Those are the people who are like, I know I need a solution. Within that group of, I know I need a solution, what does a quality solution look like? How do you know, this is a perfect phrase, how do I know it works? And how do I know it is what it says it is? Right, that's research and quality. Third party verification of quality, clinical research, human trials, growing bodies of proof that this product that I am buying using my hard-earned dollars and putting into my body is worth it. And then look for the customers who say, I'm looking for high quality. I'm looking for the best. Mm-hmm. Everyone says a lot of people say they're high quality, right? Quality is an easy word to type.
Right.
it is not an easy nor inexpensive thing to prove. And so we do the work to prove. The third party certifications, verifications, testing, the additional layers of human trials and research to add on top of peer-reviewed research on ingredients. So this is for the people who want to know it works, who want to know that it is what it says it is with third-party verification and who value that in their purchase, because you're not packing pills and powders, right? So we bring people on this journey and then find through digital marketing, research, taking people on customer journeys, find people who have challenges with or interest in one of those things. And then we make that singular point and bring them on that consumer journey. And ideally over time, whether it's interviews, press, billboards, ambassadors, tell the fuller story. We are for people who want to simplify their stack, who want to start on a comprehensive, simple journey, who want to take what they're like I did, what is their separate pill and powder endeavor, and simplify it with more quality and proof. And when we say that, we find our people.
It's great advice. And when you say ambassadors, I mean, what a huge part of the puzzle ambassadors were for AG1. I think you had like every all-star athlete on the planet at some point.
We're in a lot of locker rooms.
scooping for you. I did want to ask about one other collaboration. I'm not sure if you were there at the time with going back to Cinnabon, but the Better Call Saul collaboration. Were you involved in that at all?
Very involved in that. And this is an interesting lesson in brand building in the modern era, even though
let me just interrupt you for a second. Okay. For people who don't know, so on the show Better Call Saul, there is a guy whose name might be Saul, not the most law-abiding person on the planet, a lawyer who has represented drug dealers and things like that, and he goes into witness protection. And we find him working as a manager of a Cinnabon.
People think things like that. And for anyone who also doesn't know, Cinnabon was I forgot how long it was, 90 seconds. This became one of the most successful television series of all time. And this scene of this guy being a manager of a Cinnabon in Omaha was the opening every episode for seasons.
Right.
And it looks like we were the most brilliant brand placement team, and that we had the foresight to know that Better Call Saul would be as, if not more popular than its preceding series, Breaking Bad. None of that is true. None of that is true. Don't give us so much credit. Here's what you should give us credit for. My team, me as a leader, our culture, and what I still bring forward, even at AG1. What happened was that in the last episode of Breaking Bad, so Better Call Saul was the prequel, the spinoff and the prequel. In the last episode of Breaking Bad, there was a scene. And in the scene, there was a line that was something like, you're not much better than, or you're lucky if you could be, it was definitely not complimentary, a manager at a Cinnabon in Omaha. Now, my team and I, we were huge fans of Breaking Bad. So imagine team running this company, this consumer brand, watching an incredible show in its final episodes, and your company is organically mentioned as part of the line. You freak out, you touch each other, you're like, oh my gosh, did you see that? Right, we're going crazy. But what bridged that just like, oh, isn't that great? So we had nothing to do with that line.
Yeah, it was okay.
Place in pop culture. So that's also a thing. Very nostalgic, known brand. Is our head of social media then tweeted, or now ex-posted, it was Twitter back then, a link to Bob Odenkirk, to the show, a real live link to an application to be a manager at a Cinnabon in Omaha. And the show, one, it kind of broke the internet for a moment. It was like very viral. People were like, oh, Cinnabon, that's so cool. Like, you know, you're in a moment of real fans.
Yeah.
And the show producers and writers just thought that was so cool. And what it said was, we're okay being made fun of. Again, it wasn't a compliment. It wasn't saying,
yeah,
manager of Cinnabon in Omaha. It was a slight. And we had fun with it. And so they called us when Better Call Saul was in its production. And said, look, it's just a pilot. I'm sure it's going to turn into nothing. But would you be willing to let us film at a Cinnabon where we film to have a scene? And we're like, of course, but you have to pay us to shut down the location because it's a franchisee's location. And we did. And then we had fun with it. And it turned into a pilot. And the pilot took off. And then we made an agreement for it to go on and on. And, you know, I could say we were lucky. I could say we were good. It was both. But the point is, one, be real fans of something. Like, you work for a brand, but you should still love what you love, because in there lies an intersection with culture. And then if something happens, having the culture where my social media team didn't need to go through 3 weeks of check-ins to ask, can I post this thing to this person? They just, you know, they just did it. And so there's a culture of ownership, of flexibility, of engagement that, you know, again, these lines that you can't give us too much credit for being strategic, but we did the things that allowed the paths to exist that converged to create a completely unexpected opportunity for free.
So you brought this up earlier, but your career path starts, your professional work starts at a Hooters. And so I'm wondering, you know, you've talked so much about connecting dots and stuff. Was that a thing that you did with the vision that I'm going to work my way up in this organization and it's going to lead to this and this and this? Or is it just like a job to have a job and then you saw an opportunity?
I mean, in the early days, it was truly just a job. I was the first person in my family to get into college. My family was very poor on both sides of my family. We left my dad when I was 9 years old. I was raised by a single mom. I started working when I was 15. I had multiple jobs. I worked in malls, I cleaned gym equipment, and I happened to be a hostess at Hooters while I was still in high school. All these jobs to help have income to save up for college, but also to pay for my living expenses. Because when I was 18, I'm like, I'm out of here. And so I need to pay for an apartment and a car and gas. And some crazy things happened. Like I planned on going to, I was an electrical engineering, computer sciences major. Then I planned on going to law school. This was the plan. This was the dream. And over time, once I moved up from being a hostess to a waitress and bartender, I had higher income. Like waitresses and bartenders often make more than hostesses. So I could quit my mall job. I could quit the other jobs and just do this one thing that had the highest income. And I loved it. And I started working every job I could. When the cooks quit, I learned how to cook and be helpful in the kitchen. When the bartender needed to leave, I learned how to be a bartender. So I had all these different jobs and shifts I had exposure to. So if there were no more waitress shifts on a Thursday afternoon or Thursday evening, I could pick up a kitchen shift. And the waitress shift was more, you know, was more valuable from an income perspective, but the second best was anything that was available. And that then resulted in I accidentally learned how to run a restaurant because I was being opportunistic. I needed to make money. I needed the most shifts to make money. I think there was a period of time where I set the record for close opens. I believe it was 21, like close the restaurant, open the restaurant, close the restaurant, open the restaurant.
Really? Wow.
Just making money, right? To support my living.
Yeah.
And then the company was growing around the world and I got a phone call and I had become a trainer and a shift leader. So I had more responsibility in the restaurant. And I got a phone call asking me, inviting me to be a part of a traveling training team to go open franchises around the world when I was 19. First restaurant opening was Sydney, Australia. Didn't have a passport, never been on a plane. So all that led to, and it's easy to kind of look up the journey from there, but I was just trying to be helpful. I was just trying to maximize my income. And that led to unexpected opportunity. What it was I'm going to work every job in this restaurant. So maybe one day if this company starts accelerating international operations, I'll get a phone call. Like who could ever predict?
Right.
The answer is no one.
It sounds like, you know, everything you've described so far, it sounds like a true superpower of yours is just recognizing opportunities and not just recognizing them, but going for it.
Some people, again, give me, it's certainly in this case, too much credit for being strategic and pro risk. Again, many of these things I couldn't have anticipated. I was too unsophisticated. I was too young. I was too inexperienced to even connect the dots that would later come together because I'd never witnessed them. But saying yes or volunteering or creating the opportunity to do things that then when they led to a new door opening, walking through that door, which is the part where people say, oh, you're comfortable with risk. Given where I came from, making those decisions to do something unexpected or previously unknown or atypical, it felt like more of a risk to say no. If I say no, if I wait until it's perfect, I am going to be stuck where I am. That was my fear, was being stuck. I grew up with a lot of people who I believed were stuck. And so every unexpected opportunity was stacking the odds in my favor to not be stuck, to learn something new. I learned very early on, learning is my currency. Learning is my currency. If I can learn, if I can do something new and different, I will feel alive. I will gain confidence because I keep doing something when I'm uncomfortable. And each time it sure seems to lead to something else new. I just don't know what it's going to be. So I'm going to, for the most part, keep saying yes.
That leads me to our question of the week. So subscribers to our How Success Happens newsletter were asked if there's a decision that they wish they could take back, whether it's something that they did and like, oh, I wish I didn't do that, or something they didn't do and, oh, why didn't I do that? So wondering if you have one of those career moment redos, if you could take a mulligan, is there anything that springs to mind?
I mean, generally as a philosophy, I believe any uh-oh or mistake that I have made that might typically make it to the list of answers to this question were so formative in who I was able to become, I would not take it back. Period. But there are several examples of things that were very painful in the moment that I then had to correct publicly, painfully, different decisions as a leader or lack of being in enough detail in a certain thing or not letting someone go soon enough and it became a problem, right? Things like that. The list is long of the problems I know I have either facilitated or enabled, but I had to fix them. I had to face them and fix them. And when you have a career path like mine, where I have many different jobs every few years, but the first company I was with for 14 years, the next 10, this one already 4. When you double down in your own business, almost with like an owner mindset, a founder mindset, you have to lay in the bed you make. You don't get to keep hopping, like have the fun part and then leave and somebody else deals with what's not about it. You really have to be able to face what is no longer working about what you did and get very good at spotting that early and having the humility and the bias for action to correct.
So anyone who wants to answer the question of the week and subscribe to our newsletter, info.entrepreneur.com/HSH. And now we've been taking up a lot of your time, so let's get into the speed round. What do you say?
Yeah.
So, question one: what is a habit that you are happy to have, and one that you wish you could ditch?
A habit I am happy to have is my morning ritual for myself and my family. My wake up, get lots of good movement, drink my AG1, cover my nutrient bases, have coffee or cacao with my husband. He always makes fun of me saying cacao. And that little bit of window of time with my kids. One I wish I could ditch. I love a good pastry. I love a good pastry. I love a fresh baked laminated dough. But I don't wish I could ditch it. I would just say, it's one I have to resist and only treat myself in the right ways to enable my full high energy healthfulness as a 47-year-old mom of 2 kids under the age of 9.
Okay, so AG1, big social media presence. I'm guessing that you yourself are on social media a lot. Yes. What is something that drives you crazy on social media that you wish people would stop doing or saying or all of the above?
Oh, I've got a great one for this. And when I say I wish people would stop, I want to acknowledge like there's a reason we as people behave this way. But the reality is the algorithms reward rage bait, fear-mongering, clickbait, right? A boring headline is not going to get as many clicks as a really juicy, controversial one. And that biases toward fear. And so one, I wish people would think more the short-term, that's going to get you clicks. Long-term, it hurts your reputation. What I hope for all of us is we maintain and improve the ability to think critically, to question incentives, and to recognize when we are kind of being had.
All right. I hope people are listening. It's from your heart to my heart. I don't know what the expression is, but I agree. Okay. And then finally, one other interesting thing. You mentioned your husband. You got married at Burning Man. So if you could, please describe what a reception at Burning Man is like, and was the cake Cinnabon inspired? No, okay.
No, you're in the desert. You're kind of like on the lean, mean. AG1 definitely comes in handy in the desert. Not a lot of fresh vegetation. It is, I mean, magical. We got married in the desert at Burning Man in front of a beautiful art installation, a giant metal sculpture that said magic. And the sun, there was a complete whiteout dust storm. And right as we all rode up on our bikes, the dust cleared. It was just magic. It was magic. And the sun set and it was beautiful. And so the reception was then us biking away in the sunset back to our camp to have tea. We did our camp at the time, did Persian tea ceremonies, and was just so beautiful, gathering of friends and strangers alike, and then out into the playa to explore the evening lights and music.
Wow. That sounds pretty awesome. My vision of Burning Man, you just see mud and you see disaster a lot of times. That sounds a lot nicer.
Mud's a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
Climate shifting, a little more rain in this part of the world at this time of year. But, right. You know, you make the best of it.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, obviously, you are a fountain of advice and inspiration. Where can people kind of keep up with what you're thinking and what you're doing?
One, I would say, keep up with us at drinkag1.com and drinkag1.com/science. We have such an incredible long form blog of all of our research and how to navigate this space. And we're drinkag1 or drinkagz on all the handles. And I'm Kat Cole ATL. Kat Cole was taken a long time ago when I live in Atlanta. So that's me. And so please stay connected to us. And if you have ideas or questions or feedback, we love hearing from folks. So please reach out.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this. Great, amazing story. Great hearing it.
Thank you.